Hello,
Hey.
welcome, Kim. Welcome everybody to Heal and Heal. It's another great evening to record. I feel like the last few times we recorded, it's the scary thunderstorm outside, and that's what's happening right now. But
Yeah, very true. Yeah. It was humid and crazy hot today. Kind of like some rain.
so at least growing up in Virginia, I feel like we had a lot of this in the summer where it would be a crazy hot, humid day and then it
Yeah.
would storm in the evening.
Yeah.
But I don't remember this from my last few summers in Wisconsin, like where
Yeah.
it gets like a, it's like a heat storm that gets crazy.
Yeah, it's like it'll get humid and like may like it doesn't necessarily always predict the rain, but like the rain almost always follows humidity, I feel like.
Yeah.
That's how it goes.
Well, it's an
That's your
exciting
weather update.
It's an exciting time over here at my household as we're preparing
Yes.
for the seminar this weekend. I'm trying to be less fat, trying to work out.
Oh,
Work out and clean and organize and do projects. Me and Sam built bunk beds in the basement last night because
nice.
I have created a home for Schutzen youth and in the
Yeah.
basement everyone can come stay. So we built bunk beds. And the weight limit on the top is only 150 pounds. So
No.
only our skinny legend friends can stay on the top bunk bed.
Yeah.
The
Oh
bottom
my
one
gosh.
is going to be for adult-sized women, probably.
That's funny.
But yeah, I don't know. You know, this episode we could do the requested breeding program one, or I think we should kind of instead maybe recap what we've been up to for the last couple weeks. Like it's been pretty busy.
Yeah.
And then see where we're at time-wise after we get into some of that.
Sounds good.
Okay. Do you want to start with what you've been working on with the business, and all the parts of that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so got a new building. I feel like I might have mentioned it on the podcast like once or twice, but basically just in the midst of setting up that facility. So it's gonna be a much bigger training space. And we're gonna have a yard, fenced in yard. So I'll be able to expand my services. We're gonna do daycare, which I was always like dragging my feet on a little bit, but there's definitely demand for it where I live. And then like day trains, still like board and trains lessons, classes, all that good stuff. So yeah, that's been going slowly but steadily, like definitely starting to get pretty anxious to just get that open and going. It's a lot of like hurry up and wait, I feel like, for permits and building supplies and some stuff with our landlord and things like that. But yeah, so that's been keeping me pretty occupied. just yeah, getting the nuts and bolts of that and a little bit of a learning curve with some stuff. 'Cause like I've been running my own business, but like scaling it is definitely a whole nother ball game. So
Well,
but it's been good.
especially like you scaled it a little aggressively. I feel like normally, people, it's more over time, but basically the spot where you were in, you kind of had to make a big jump.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So,
But
yeah,
I
it's
saw.
funny too, 'cause like I'm usually pretty conservative about changes in this manner. Like I'm usually not a person, like I am like all about, like Evan and I always talk about organic growth, so it is kind of unusual, like even putting it that way, that it has gone as fast as it has. So, yeah, definitely a big change from what we're kind of used to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been positive though, and because it's been kind of the kick in the butt, everybody needed. And
Yeah.
I saw you guys did post the class schedule, so it seems like things are picking up.
Yeah, just need people to sign up now, but you know.
Yeah.
We've at least got stuff set up to the point where we can do pretty much everything except daycare. So
I think earlier in the year we had talked about when we had changed the structure to the drop-ins, or like when the drop-ins were invented.
yeah.
Do you want to like do a check-in about those now? Because I feel like we definitely explained the motivation behind doing those and reducing our club days. I was just discussing this weekend with someone that was organizing their club.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's going well as a model so far and like gotten good feedback overall. Like, I think I've heard complaints. I don't know, like maybe people don't like it, but if they don't, they're not telling me. So, yeah, like you're probably gonna just kind of keep going with it. But yeah, no, I do think people enjoy it. I think they're getting value out of it. It's definitely way more an improvement to my mental health. Like, even when you were out of town this weekend, but like a few of us kind of got together just casually, and I just kind of vibed and like hung out at the property as other people were training. It was like it was nice to not feel obligated to run it, you know, just like a very unofficial little training group. And I think like as we do club as well, it's starting to get that feel. Like we've had some really good, like last club session we had some really good kind of like just brainstorming, and I'm not the only one out there, and you know, it's definitely like we're seeing progress, and like that vision of the club as like the serious people, I think is definitely kind of coming to fruition, or like people that are just looking for like very high level but open training. Like I definitely I'm seeing that kind of start to come together. And I definitely think like taking stress off of the club to be and do everything and fill every capacity has been a pretty key role in that. And then also just kind of aligning expectations and stuff like that. I think it's definitely helped. But yeah, I don't know from you know, a client perspective from the drop-ins and club member, what your thoughts are about that.
Well, I first want to give the caveat that it's not that we've changed from not serious people to serious people. I think it's more about people who not only want a level of agency in their own training journeys, but also have the skill to maintain that level of
Yes.
agency.
Yes.
So, you know, we still do. I mean, we have people that are, you know, very much hobbyists, obviously,
Right,
but
right, right,
it's,
right.
I think it's been a positive change because basically what was happening last summer was Kimberly runs a 9-hour private lesson group where everybody gets about a 20-minute private lesson. And you know, say what you will about that, it was exhausting for everyone involved. Like we would be training from, you know, an 8 a.m. start of tracking till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Like it was just ridiculous. And it took up your entire Sunday and it was just a mess. So from my perspective, it's really positive. And I was thinking about it. I was like, man, did I get free training last year? And it's like, no. Like,
Right.
I wasted a lot of time. And
Yeah.
also, like, when you're newer and you have a young puppy, like, you also benefit from those short sessions, just like a puppy does. Like, you
Yeah.
don't need to be grinding that long. Like another version of me maybe could have gotten gassed out really quickly last year by those super long days.
Well, and I think the irony too is like the people that needed the least amount of help got the least amount of attention. So the people that could take agency of their own training were almost getting nothing. Whereas like the more like the people that needed a little bit more help with that kind of stuff were taking the most time. And it was like it ended up being kind of the opposite of what kind of should be the time allotment. Like even like you talking about your work, that principle of you know, you should be giving your highest achievers the most compliments. Like we should be giving our highest achievers the most time, but what ends up happening is kind of the opposite. And I think, you know, it's kind of a subconscious, like not a you know, an intentional thing, but people that do competent enough job kind of get left alone, but it's like they also definitely need help and accountability and spotting, and you know, like there's always room for improvement. So like we didn't want to just stagnate at like, okay, good enough, you know, and that's kind of what was happening is the people that could get to good enough on their own, were kind of a little bit stuck there.
Yeah, and like I don't know, it's funny because if there's anything I can do, it's teach the healing to a puppy. And I was watching back footage of Toddy like 3 weeks ago, And I saw in two sessions that in basic, his butt, I wasn't letting touch the ground by like, you know, an inch maybe, or like half an inch, not much. But it took me two sessions to see that because I review the tape.
Yeah.
He's so big that it was, I was based on feel, I thought it was correct, but it's literally like, it was just off slightly. But what I was thinking to myself is, you know, back when I was getting spotting, like I have fallen into the trap of not working Todd in front of people because it feels like a waste of time because I've done this recently, you know, to a high standard with the healing. But it's funny because it would have been one rep that was like quote unquote incorrect. Instead it was about nine reps since I did like four one session, five the other one or whatever. So
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that stuff does matter in the long run. I mean, again, it's like a minor thing for someone who is paying attention, but I mean, we were even like getting on another club member at our last club session about like letting drift happen a little bit. And she needed some help to figure out what that difference was that we were talking about. And if we had not caught that, because again, she does like competent enough work on her own, like it's really good for the help she's gotten. And if we had just kind of let that slide, like that would have been a problem, you know, 5 months down the road when we're finally like, hey bro, your dog is, you know, 11 feet in front of you.
Right.
In the healing.
Yeah. We all have little areas that we tend to let slide.
Yeah, totally.
Guess mine's probably the mindset stuff, but why don't you, next part of your update, talk about looking ahead to the seminar this weekend, what your plans are, what you're looking to work on, and then, you know, after we have the seminar, I'm sure we'll record again and we can do a follow-up to that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I kind of just want to show kind of just the picture of the routine and just kind of see where Amanda thinks my biggest like bang for my buck is with improvements. There's nothing that I'm like particularly like super stuck or stressed about necessarily. I think I do want to focus on tracking a little bit more heavily, just because I feel like up to this point, like I was talking with Sam, that up to this point I have used only kibble like on the track and like not use any higher value rewards, not paid with the ball at the article, and like it's for sure good, like the dog is a solid tracker, but like I think we can kind of just up the ante a little bit and just kind of bring in a little bit more depth to it for him when we start hitting the challenges of like a Schutzen 3 track and, you know, potential different terrain and stuff like that. So I'm kind of just wanting to look for, you know, what feedback might be on next steps that would be good for us. And I think that'll be valuable for a lot of people. So kind of like that'll be my focus, is tightening up tracking. And yeah, I don't know, like everything else, I think probably just looking for another set of eyes on it. But yeah, I think tracking is going to be probably where I spend most of my time. Like I want to do obedience for sure the first day, obviously, but I might end up tweaking, doing like two tracking sessions, Saturday and Sunday. But I mean, again, we'll kind of see what Amanda says too, but.
Right. Yeah. Tracking has been interesting. I've been basically doing over the last few weeks. Well, I mean, I guess over the last whole tracking season, I've been kind of doing what you're describing where, you know, all last year using all kibble, this year moving to raw topper. And yesterday morning, I actually started, I tried a ball for the first time. Because I had a few goals. The holes that I see, I wanted, she tends to indicate on the article, like when she's at that footstep, like,
okay.
She tends to cue. It seems almost like she waits to also see it. Like, I know she smells it. It seems like she also waits to see it. So I was curious if introducing the ball might even bring up drive and caution so much that she will show a change in behavior a few paces before the article.
Sure.
I was curious about that.
Sure.
And I was also curious because one of my big things with her that I haven't really had any accountability for, because if you remember at the end of last year, I was struggling to have her always indicate every article because she would rather keep hunting. This year she's been indicating fabulously. It's not been a problem. So I decided to press on it by raising criteria for the indication, because a thing she likes to do is very sneaky check like 4 or 5 times over her shoulder while I'm coming up to her I'm coming. And she also likes to have a very slight crookedness to her that helps with that sneaky looking. So again, I was going to raise criteria. No, you must be straight. You must look forward only. In addition to the ball thing. And like the other thing is, since we've been tracking with Raw Topper, I was like, I'm also only going to put kibble on the track, and I'm going to know where the kibble is, because I'm going to count out paces.
Okay.
So I was doing 15 or what was it? It was however many to the first article blank. Yep. And then after the first article, 10 paces kibble, 15 blank article, 10 paces kibble, 15 blank article, etc. So that I always could count on 10 pieces of kibble after the article.
Okay.
So what I was going to do is aggressively pop her into those kibble pieces. Like, no, you're going to take those, because I figured with lower value food, she might not want to take it. Okay. So I threw, you know, tracking, you're supposed to change one thing at a time.
Well, I mean, dog training in general, it's not a bad rule, but yeah.
I literally tossed everything into this one track, and it was like 100 pace track or 150 paces, and we were out there for like 35 minutes. Like, I was just working on all these different things and like kind of playing around, and I took her off the track because I was playing ball with her, and then I put her back on the track, and I was just messing around, and I really raised criteria like a lot faster than I would have. Like, normally I would have worked this off the track, you know, gotten to the point where I can bounce a ball up and down behind her while she's indicating and she doesn't move her head. But I was like, I'm just gonna work it on the track. So again, I was kind of like, we don't have plans to trial, like I could just completely break my article indications, whatever. And the session went fine. Like, I was seeing some improvement some places. And I was like, man, I don't know how I felt about all this. And then I went home. I did the rest of my day, whatever. In the evening, it had just thunderstormed, but it was stopped raining. So me and Sam were like, oh, let's go tracking. I'm going to go track to the little local field. Sam was like, I'll come. So I went, and I was like, just a heads up, I broke my article indications this morning. I was like, just a heads up, I literally like was doing all kinds of crazy stuff this morning, and it's gonna look like a mess, and I'm gonna be healing it for like a week or whatever.
That's hilarious. That was fine.
Everything went like every strategy I tried, the best possible result of that strategy is what occurred.
Nice.
Like, it was ridiculous, and it was so funny. And she showed change of behavior like 4 paces ahead of the article.
Oh, funny.
On
yeah.
one, she went to down early, and I scooted her up, told her, no, show me. So exactly my hypothesis, which is that she totally smells it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
like in the past, she was trying to keep hunting until the moment where she's like, no, I must down at the article.
Yeah.
But with the ball introduction, at least for one session, I feel like she was thinking, hell yeah, I found it. I'm going to get my ball.
Right. Yeah.
Which is sorry, like sorry, kind sorry, of sorry. What. It's like what I've always wanted from her with paying so heavy at the articles. But the thing is, like, her food drive is so connected to her hunt drive and desire to work overall. Like, it's not like for the love of food.
Yeah, she doesn't really care that much about the act of eating it. Like, she cares about looking for it.
So I think that might be kind of the missing piece. Like, not to do it all the time, but like maybe once a week or something. It might be kind of the missing piece of like really getting that nice, like, I am seeking an article energy like in her head.
Yeah. Well, and definitely too, I think that's kind of what I'm getting at a little bit as well with dice, is like there does need to be eventually, like, my end picture of tracking is that the dog is seeking the articles,
right?
And the articles hold absolute value. And like if you're paying with a higher value item on the track, on the articles, like you can also make a little more pressure at the articles as well, right? So like there's definitely a ton of advantages to that. Especially once you've set tracking behavior to the point where it's like pretty much a fixed action pattern. So basically, it's like, to me, that definitely makes sense as the next step. And again, like, I usually would have done it. Like, I just kind of haven't yet. But yeah, like, that's, I think going to be really helpful with now having a couple of dogs at that stage that are ready to kind of go to that level of like, okay, we're making tracking a little bit more serious, for lack of a better word, like just, yeah, kind of upping the ante and that kind of stuff, and making the dog just like think about it a little bit more rather than it being kind of a rote exercise to pick up the food, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that without the introduction of the ball in the same session, the upping the requirements of the indication,
right,
she would have been slow to indicate on the later track because she's like, oh, this again, we gotta.
Yeah, now you have more rules and I don't have any like value. Yeah, she would have been like, not resentful, like that's the wrong word, right? But like, there's a little bit of conflict there.
That's what she looks like. I mean, she looks resentful at times. Like last year when it was like, no, like you're going to down. It was definitely like she looks back.
It's an interruption, like, for her. Yeah,
exactly, because she would rather stay on the track. But
yeah, like for some dogs, if you try to, you know, if you don't necessarily train it properly, like if you try to give them the ball and bite work, they're gonna be like, fuck you, like this isn't a reward,
right.
This is an interruption that I don't want right now, and they're gonna be like, ah, fuck your ball, but in obedience they'll happily take it. It's that kind of thing for her with like hunt versus just eating food at the article.
It was so funny trying to use the scatter and protection this weekend because like she's trying to chatter but she knows she must eat the food or she'll be in trouble.
Yeah.
Like, and she's just like chattering and eating the scatter, and it's like falling out of her mouth, and she has to pick it back up. Like, it was so funny. Oh my god. Just watching a dog like have that much conflict over something was just obviously, like, that sounds toxic, but, like, you know, conflict over a food scatter, like, so funny to me.
Right, like, just how hard her brain is working is amusing. Like, to see dogs in that state where they're, like, actively trying to figure it out, but, like, they're kind of struggling. Like, you know they'll get through it, but, like, it's definitely, you can see the difficulty. I mean, it's like watching a toddler trying to figure out how to tie his shoes. It's like, Jesus Christ. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Tie your fucking shoes.
Exactly.
It's kind of funny.
Looking ahead to the seminar, do you feel like what do you think are going to be some of the big things that we hit on, if you can think about people that are working? Like, we have a good amount of outside people, we have a good amount of people with young puppies. It's definitely more of a young dog crowd this time.
I think what's going to be nice is I think it's going to be a good refresher foundation, because last seminar we had a lot of older dogs, and we were working on a lot of like tightening things up and holding things to a higher standard and all that good stuff. And so I think it'll be nice to kind of see a little bit more of a range of dogs this time. And older dogs now, I think, will be a really great learning experience, because we can push them even further. Like, we've kind of got, like, now we've got beginners, which is cool because it's always a good refresher, but then we've got, like, rather than just kind of intermediate, we've got advanced, like these young dogs that were like around a year last time, and like you can only do so much with a year old. They're now, you know, 15 18 months, whatever, looking at, you know, one by the fall or that kind of track, right? If we pushed it, or, you know, at the very least, like they're going to be one ready before we put them up and come out in spring. But so I think it'll be a nice blend of stuff. I'm having a hard time like predicting exactly how it's going to go, again, just because I don't necessarily know everybody's dogs this time. I think it'll be a little bit more similar to the first seminar, of kind of just getting those basics, and Amanda kind of, you know, just talking about like proper luring and what she does with puppies and, you know, timing and just kind of those fundamentals, and then some like really advanced work that's pretty finessed with some of the handlers that have a little bit older or more advanced dogs.
Something I was thinking about this weekend, it was Sunday and I was about to need to drive back, and it was like 94 degrees, super sunny. I was sunburnt, tired. And one of the handlers at the place I was at was really a novice, like first sport dog. The puppy is like, I don't even know, 4 or 5 months old.
Yeah.
And she asked to like have one of her sessions be tracking. So, I guess there's no reason to keep it private. Yuri was gonna, that was who I was done seeing in Missouri, was going to show her a scent pad and, like, talk about scent pads. And so he, like, starts to walk away with her, and I hear him go, so scent pads are, like, and, you know, trail off.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he starts to give the introduction, and yeah. I was tempted to stay in my chair.
Nice.
Because, you know, how many people have I seen introduce a scent pad?
Mm-hmm.
A lot. How many times have I introduced a scent pad? A lot. Like,
mm-hmm.
at this point, coach other people how to do it, too. And then I was like, no, shithead.
Yep.
I was like,
yep.
You should listen to infinite people explain the scent pad, because all these foundations, like, the reason we are always reworking them, re-brainstorming them, re-listening to other people explain them, like, you can gain one little tiny tidbit maybe from this, or
absolutely.
Just hear it said again. And I stood up and went and listened, but.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I think it's those simple things that almost you hear the least explanation on, right? Because it's like such a blip, and it's like, oh, you're just, you know, you're introducing the idea of hunting, and, you know, you're associating the food, the disturbance with the food, and it sounds super simplistic, but, like, you can get pretty complex with that. Like, I've been to a seminar before where, like, this guy had the goal of, you know, he wanted to get to, like, 10 minutes unbroken of the puppy hunting in the scent pad, and he adds food as they go, and, like, he, like, went pretty in-depth in it, and I was like, huh, I've never looked at it under this much of a microscope, but it totally made sense. But a lot of people don't really bother to explain that further in depth because they're explaining it to a beginner. But if you go back as a more advanced person, you can actually get pretty nuanced with it. And especially too, like, listening to other people teach it, it's like, okay, what do you emphasize? Why is this important to you? Even though it's the same exercise, everybody has, like, a little bit of a different flavor on it, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember, there's, like, a quote or something. Maybe it's about riding horses. There's some kind of quote, someone will know and tell us, but
yeah, right.
It's about, like, hearing the basics over again as an advanced person and, like, seeing new light, basically seeing new, like, nuance in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know the exact quote, but I mean, yeah, the gist makes sense.
The quote is the quote.
Yeah. But,
yeah, I definitely think that makes sense. I think it's going to be, I don't know, it could go many ways, the seminar. Fortunately, some of us aren't working. Some people have been pretty tough financial spots right now.
Yeah.
Myself included. I plan to audit two of the days. I may work maybe one spot for tracking purposes.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Like, I really shouldn't, because money has been flying out of my ears lately.
Uh-huh. I hear you. Yeah.
Just, like, hemorrhaging cash, but it's fine.
Uh-huh. I know. I built this nice little nest egg, and it's all just, like, leaving for the building. And I'm like, so much. Just so much money.
Really, really, really sad.
Horrifying.
Yeah. More catching up. I went this weekend down to Eury's in Missouri. I was in his group for helper camp, as we talked about in the recap episode. And then I have friends that train with him regularly from online. So I basically weaseled my way into that situation as politely as possible. And I was really nervous to go down, which I told you about a few times, because number one, I weaseled, which I don't like to weasel. Like, I mean, it wasn't bad. Like, it was fine. But, like, I just don't really like to do that. I like to have it happen more organically, but that's hard when someone's, like, in Missouri.
Yeah.
The other thing was that in this sport, I haven't gone to do anything on my own since I came to see you for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was, you know, I haven't had that many reps of that. Like, I've had you guys around for all the rest of the experiences.
Yeah.
And also, like, I'm a bit of a planner. I like to get the best place to stay, the closest to where I'm going, and I like to sort that out. Like, I'll take a last-minute trip all day, but when I was Googling, there were some issues with, like, logistics that were kind of stressing me out, because I was like, oh, is it best to stay here? Is it best to stay here?
Mm-hmm.
And then also, like, I really wanted to do good work down there. Like, I wanted to do good handling, good leash work, all that stuff, and I don't know. It's funny because I wonder, you know what I wonder, Kim? I wonder if other people worry more about, like, how their dogs are going to do. Because remember, I was worried about the trial with, like, how the dog would do.
Yeah.
But when I go to these training weekends, like anywhere, or even when we went down to Bill's Club for the first time, I don't even think about how the dog is going to do.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah.
Because it's a dog, you know what I mean? Like, I care about how I'm going to do and, like, how I'm going to be received and how to be respectful there and, like, a good guest and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I think probably, yeah, I would say, trying to think back, I don't know, I would say I'm usually, if I get nervous, it's definitely about how I'm going to do, and, like, the only reason that I'm thinking about the dog is because the dog is reflecting my previous training.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a lot more about, like, yeah, like, do people see that I'm competent or think I'm an idiot, you know what I mean? But, like, honestly, like, I've definitely gotten better at just not getting nervous in general. Like, that comes with time, like you said, with reps. Yeah, I think when I started, though, I probably did think about the dog a little bit more. Like, do people think I have a good dog? Which is funny, because as a breeder, I actually care less now. But I think that, like, comes in having confidence in my own choices. But yeah, it's like, I think a lot of people do worry about the whole package, and then both of those just get, yeah, it's like quite a basket of nerves that you can kind of create for yourself there. But
well, that's what I was thinking, is because, like, I feel like in the most peaceful way possible, I've been told so many times that the dog is nice in this phase that it doesn't even cross my mind.
Right. Yeah. Again, it's that confidence of, like, you know, she's not gonna, like, run off the field or do something, like, completely ridiculous. Yeah, I think it's like the unpredictability, right? Is, like, it's harder at this point probably to predict actually how you're gonna act, but the dog is actually pretty predictable.
Yeah.
But you almost feel less controlled over your own actions and handling because it's so new to you. You know, just working with another person, like, it's just, there's a lot of unknown factors there, like you said, even the logistics and stuff like that. But, like, you saw your dog work on Yuri, or, you know, under helpers that were working in Yuri's under Yuri's coaching and whatnot, so, like, you know how the dog's gonna act. But so that probably helps.
Well, I think what it comes down to is what you just said, which is predictability. Like, if I were to distill down, I'm just thinking of Lorelai, and, like, when I was considering obedience trials with her at the BRC, like, I never had nerves about dock diving or barn hunt trials because the dog is a rock star and she loved it and she was predictable.
Right.
But if I think back to why GRC SR test scared me so much, it was because she is inherently unpredictable in obedience work.
Yep.
But Sister is predictable in every avenue of her life. She never, ever does worse than I thought she would do. She does what I thought or slightly better.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, and I think it's, like, also, that reminds me of, like, you talking about what makes Dice kind of a fun dog to trial is because he's also, like, pretty predictable, right? And, like, I think that comes with just having, like, a nice, like, normal, steady dog is a dog that has, like, good enough nerves for this sport. And again, like, these dogs don't need to be, like, everybody is, like, fantastic and amazing and, like, you know, nothing, like, never been scared in their life. But, like, as long as they're a nice, normal dog, they're probably not gonna do anything that's so out of the blue that you're like, oh my gosh, like, my dog just spooked at a, I don't know, I can't even think of anything, like, but yeah, like, or if you have that dog, you at least know that it's gonna happen. But most of the time, like, we've at least gotten to know our dogs enough through training already, or we've got a nice dog that just is like, yep, I'm here, I'm gonna show up, and we don't have to worry about them kind of getting stupid over something.
You know, what just came into my mind too is that, just like I was talking about earlier, being unafraid to break my article indication, if that's what it took for me to do an experiment. I think that another takeaway I took from this weekend is being unafraid to break all kinds of things. Like, certain dogs pushed really hard in certain areas, and here he's looking like calls it a boo boo. You know, training goofs basically, but I'm just thinking back to helper camp, like, you know, one person, the sleeve was on the ground, they're like, let your dog get it, and they're like, no, they're gonna get a bad grip on it. And it's like, you can't be afraid to break this stuff. Like, you can't you can't be afraid to be a scientist and
absolutely
quote unquote break things, because if the dog is the dog's gonna be fine. It's one rep. Like, again, right. our actions and our training don't have that much impact on animals for the most part.
Right. Yeah, it's like the actions over time. Like, it's the 10 million reps aside from that one that are gonna matter much more. Like, I talk about this in trial prep, is like, people kind of freak out and try to train right before trial, and it's like, hey, like, their dog doesn't sit the day before a trial, like, you're probably still fine because he's sat 1,000 other times when you're practicing it. And like, most of the time that's pretty well true. And too, like, something that Marco said was in his beginning presentation was that, like, everybody makes mistakes. It's just that, like, as you get good, you figure out how to fix them a little bit quicker, and make, like, a few less egregious ones. But, like, learning does not happen without error, you know? Like, that's a fundamental thing, is there has to be prediction error in order for learning to occur. So you have to experiment with stuff. Otherwise, you're never going to figure out if your hypothesis was correct or incorrect.
Right. I agree. Makes sense to me.
I got a little bit distracted by Riley barking there. I feel like I had another thought, but
she's a bad girl.
Yeah, for a bad girl.
Let me think. What else do we need to catch people up on? What else is going on? It feels like such a busy summer, but in fact, after this weekend, I have 2 blank weekends, which I'm very excited about.
Yeah.
I don't have any commitments. I'm sure that I'll ruin that for myself shortly here, but.
Right. Well, it's funny because I was like asking you about the calendar a few weeks ago or whatever, and I was like, I feel like I gotta be missing stuff, because, like, after the Amanda seminar, like, the calendar is pretty empty. It's just so front loaded of a summer.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. But yeah, I feel like we've been so busy, but at the same time, like, I don't know with what. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like that weird, I don't know. My brain is just soup right now, so it's fine.
Well, I felt a lot of angst about, so I was going to train Saturday and Sunday, and then I also had the ability to stay Monday and, like, go home Monday night to work Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I was, like, being so angsty on Sunday afternoon, because I was like, God, I should probably leave, because I'm getting so much out of this. But also, like, with my dog, we were at a point where, like, okay, now I need to go home for a month and experiment and rep it and, like, work on a few things. And, like, also sitting there, and I was like, oh, the dogs have been in the car all weekend, and, like, should really go, you know, take them swimming or something, and I should go back, and I should work out and clean the house and stuff. And I'm really proud of myself, because I did go home.
Yeah.
Sunday afternoon, which, like, I never would have done that last year. I would have just, like, been exhausted and, like, ruined my own life on Tuesday. And it's awful. And actually, that's a parallel I'm doing. I keep joking and saying I'm doing a sober summer where I'm not drinking, but, like, I'm kind of not drinking.
Yeah.
I only got drunk one night last weekend because it was my best friend's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, like, my whole idea behind sober summer is I'm either having one drink or zero.
Yep.
Instead of, for a long time, I was doing these, like, 3-4 drink nights, or, like, you know, 12, 4, yep. 13 drink nights. But, like, those 3-4 drink nights were really detrimental, because I was spending a bunch of money on the 3 or 4 drinks, consuming those calories I didn't need, and then I'd feel, like, a little off the next day.
Yeah.
So,
totally. Yeah. I haven't drank since WDC, actually. Because, I just realized, like, this is really pointless, and I never feel good. And, like, I don't actually enjoy drinking that much. Like, I can have fun without it. So, yeah, and it's way better to not waste entire days with a hangover, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been good. We love healthy choices.
I really enjoy it, but what makes it fun for me is when I can go, like, all out, like, once a month or less. Like, I was just kind of getting to the point where too many times I was like, well, you know, might as well. And it's just
right.
It's not appropriate anymore.
Yeah, that's the funny thing is, like, I don't even miss it. That's where I'm like, oh, yeah, like, this was just kind of a stupid habit that I was just continuing to do because I've done it, you know, but, like, wasn't actually serving any real purpose for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't say that I miss it, but I definitely miss at times Overall, I like my life the best now that it's ever been, right? But, like, yeah. I definitely miss times in my life at times where I just had less going on, especially right now because I have four dogs right now, which sucks, to be honest. Yeah. And, like, just the amount of, like, physical tasks that it takes to care for four dogs, even when nobody is sick, knock on wood. Like, it's just a lot of, like, physical work for me I don't want to do it. I just don't.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot to keep up with.
Like, I want to spend time with everybody and...
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Okay, let me think. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that needs to be said. I guess the other thing, today there's been a bunch of... Amanda made a post talking about, like, which puppy did you keep? Did you see this post? It's fairly interesting. Basically, she's talking about there's two puppies in a litter. She's thinking about keeping back. One puppy A is basically what she sought to achieve with the pairing, like a good balance of the two. Puppy B is a more extreme puppy that reminds her a ton of the mother that she really liked. Like, what puppy do you keep? And reading through everyone's responses to that has been tremendously interesting. I don't know if you got the time to read through them.
I did not actually read through the responses. I saw the post itself, but I didn't actually go back to it and read. I'm trying not to be on Facebook as much also. I'm trying to read instead. I've read, like, 100 pages in the last 2 days, and it's phenomenal. So, anyway, sidebar.
we love that. However, I can read and also be on Facebook. I read all the time and I'm on Facebook because I'm better than you.
apparently.
But yeah, I just wanted to call out what Yuri was saying. He would always keep puppy A, the balance of the pairing, because basically what you should be doing with breeding is hopefully to add certain paternal traits to a maternal line that you know really well.
Right.
And that he was saying, it seems like a dog is best who is true to their entire pedigree versus a dog that is heavy on one side of the pedigree.
Huh, that's interesting. Yeah, I can see that logic.
So I thought that was super interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah, and it's interesting too, right? Because, like, the whole idea, not the whole idea, but, like, a lot of the idea behind sport breedings and, like, breeds in general and closed stud books is for the not the management, the upholding, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh my god, I'm so brain dead.
Preservation
yeah, of, like, extreme traits. Like, border collies are very extreme in stalking, you know, they're like shepherds, like, have their extreme traits and all this stuff, right? So it's like, I also can see the logic of, like, keeping the more extreme dog in prey drive, you know, because it's like, well, I'm trying to boost prey drive. I'm trying to make that and maintain how extreme we are in that particular trait. But, like, also important to keep the balance, you know, like, I think it's such a moving target, because it also depends, like, all of this stuff is also relative, and you can't really make these decisions in a vacuum, because it's like, it depends on what else you also have access to, and, like, I think ideally you're doing a little bit of both, right? And, like, honestly, like, Fatal and Fidget kind of hits that target for me. Like, I would say Fatal is a little bit more an extreme version of her father's traits. Like, I see more of her father in her. Like, she's a little bit more of like, just an edgier dog, like, more serious dog. Like, Fidget, I think you would have a really hard time, like, making her mad, you know what I mean? But, like, Fatal, like, brings a little bit more in that aspect to the table and, like, bite work. And so she, for me, like, I definitely want to keep that in my program, because it's like, okay, she maintained maternal traits for sure. Like, she has Allie's stability, and, like, all of Allie's other good characteristics. But we definitely added in Dad. But Fidget is much more of, like, a balance between the two, where, like, she's much more reminiscent. Like, I think you could look at her side by side with Allie and be like, oh yeah, for sure, that's Allie's kid. Like, no question. but still adds the intensity I was looking for with Dad. But like, definitely she's not the extreme version. Like she, like, again, that's what I was looking for with the pairing, essentially. Like both of them are close, you know, but like she's more towards the 50% mark, whereas Fatal is like probably more like a 60-40 or like 70-30. But like I lack that overall in my program, you know, is like some of that edge and that seriousness. So it's like if I want to make jumps a little bit quicker, maybe I take the more extreme version. And then you come back to the center because you have access to that mother line that's like super duper stable and you know that. So I think that's the other like interesting thing about Yuri's comment is like it's definitely an overall, like it's a really sound principle overall, but like I would be curious to see, okay, what if you've kind of achieved your goal in adding paternal characteristics to that mother? Like at what point is it like, okay, now time to swing the pendulum back, you know?
So that's kind of where I was going, like me being uneducated, like, I don't know, whatever. I obviously wasn't going to comment, like, what the hell do I know? Yeah, but right. What I was thinking is, like, my gut reaction was, F it. I got plenty of dogs. Keep the freak. You know what I mean? Right. Like, that's kind of my perspective more is, like, I'm...
But Yuri, I totally see Yuri's point, right? Because the breeding dog that's a mix of both is much, much more predictable.
Yeah, certainly. Like, but like, I guess.
But as a competitor, absolutely you take the extreme dog. But as a breeder, I think you have to take, not have to, right? But like, I think that's the tricky part.
Yeah.
Is when you pick extremes, you're picking an outlier. And so that bell curve, like you're pushing it and you're going to get dogs that do not. It's hard to explain this without like me drawing the visual, but like if you can imagine a bell curve and the outliers on the edge of that bell curve that you bred,
yeah,
like it's not stacked, like it does not have a lot of weight underneath it, like the area under that curve is not big, and so you don't have a lot of weight on that outlier, and so it's more likely that you're going to get, because the weight is by the average, it's much more likely that you're going to get the average. So it's like, how much progress are you actually making by choosing the outlier? Like you might be better choosing the dog that's a little bit more average, because at least you know that there's weight with that breeding animal, and it's at least more predictable. Like even if it's kind of, you know, in 50 years maybe it's a little bit of a similar outcome, but you're going to have an easier time understanding what is actually going to pop out of that dog than if you choose an outlier. Like it's going to be a little bit more scattered potentially.
Well,
again, super oversimplified genetics right there, but like,
I think you know, it goes back to conversations that we had earlier in the year, or I guess late in last year, when we were discussing breeding the H litter, where it was kind of like, well, when you breed to the extreme and you go for the strong edge and stuff like that, what do you do with the fact that 80% of those puppies are possibly, like, really unstable or, like, problematic or whatever?
Right.
And the answer to that was kind of like, well, if it's your program and you are in the situation this one person is in, like, just send it. Like, that was kind of their perspective.
Right.
Without naming names. But, like, yeah, I definitely think about that. You know, I've thought about that before with sister, because, like, if I were... to be interested in breeding sister, like what would I try to do there, you know? Like her heels, or just lean in and be like, nope, we're gonna get the most twitchy, like out of their mind, like psycho dog, and just with a bunch of aggression just make monsters, like, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think like for me, my favorite theory, or like what jives the most with me, is that the dogs always have to meet minimum. So let's say that sister had you know, like, again, to make up numbers, and like this is not true, so like don't freak out if you're listening and you're a sister fan and it sounds like I'm slandering her, because I'm not, which is pointed exactly at Lainey, just kidding. So let's say instead of, like, you know, having the minimum of 70% prey drive that I would arbitrarily say that a breeding female needs, she's got 40, but she's got like 100% aggression. I'm like, fuck, I'm trying to, like, let's say sister was a male, like I would actually like be looking to add a little bit of aggression in my lines, because I'm like really heavy on prey, don't have as much aggression as I would maybe like. And so I'm like, sweet, she's 100% aggression, like absolutely got to breed that, right? But if she lacks the prey drive, like that's where I'm gonna get the problem, right? Because now
Right.
there's no base. There's nothing to come back to. It's just empty shell kind of underneath there
Yeah.
without that strong prey drive. And so if I get, like let's say there's a spec, you're gonna get a standard deviation of 30% in the litter. And so I might have a puppy pop out that's 70% aggression. And what did I say? She had 20% aggression in my theoretical. Anyway, the dog has like 10 or 20, I forget my numbers, right? But the dog has like 10 or 20% prey drive, which is like, for all intents and purposes, nothing, right? Like that's a dog that's going to chase for a second and then like, meh, it's your pet dog. And so you've got a dog now, and this is also, again, like most pet dogs. To a good degree, like 100% aggression, and maybe it also lacks confidence, right? Again, this is a very oversimplified example, but now I've got 100% aggression and no prey drive. Like, what do you do with that dog? Like, it's very difficult to make that a well-utilized sport dog, or even honestly for police work, right? Like, even police dogs need some prey drive, right? Like, actually, they need quite a bit, right? Anyway, different rabbit hole, but. I think that's why, like, now let's say, okay, I want to breed to sister because she's got all that aggression. She's got 100% aggression, but she meets that standard of 70% prey drive. Like, that's as low as I'll go. So now, with a standard deviation of 30%, the worst I'm going to get is 40% prey drive and 100% aggression. And that's, maybe not the most balanced dog, but like, we can work it, right? Like, that's not a dog that's going to not be able to be brought back to the middle a little bit with good training. And I think if we uphold the minimum standards, it's at least you're stacking the deck in your favor that at least you're going to have an animal that is able to be placed somewhere, even if it's not a sport home, and live a fairly safe and normal life. But if we breed to extremes that are 100% aggression but 0% prey, that's where you start to play with fire a little bit, because it's like, okay, what if you don't get the balance? Like, what if it does? Because like, that's not, you don't breed a 40-pound dog to a 100-pound dog and get all 70-pound dogs, right? Like, we know that. And so are you will like, what happens to the 40-pound dog that pops out? What happens to the 100-pound dog that pops out? Or at worst, what happens to the 10-pound dog that pops out and the 130-pound dog that pops out, right? So like, you kind of have to look at, okay, where do my averages lie and what are those standard deviations, and what is the tolerance for a deviation from that average? And of course, like, line breeding, inbreeding, selective breeding in general, we're going to get tighter standard deviations, but they're still for sure going to exist. And again, like, that's the whole point of like closed stud books, is that we're increasing, theoretically, again, there's issues with closed stud books that we can get down that rabbit hole at some time. But the idea with closed stud books is to increase predictability of your breeding stock. That's my
So,
fan.
just to avoid going into the breeder episode that we wanted to do later, I'm gonna just do a hard pivot and talk about something else. But yes, I think we possibly had this conversation also before, and like I wanna like my follow-ups to the conversation are to pivot like into your actual program, so
Yep,
that's why I
yep.
wanna
Sure.
pivot, but
Yep.
let's talk about your Patreon.
Oh, sure. So I've been wanting to put out content for a while. But haven't really just pulled the trigger on it. Like, I've always been like, ah, I'm too busy. But I really enjoy writing specifically. And I was actually talking with another friend recently who is not in the dog world at all. She's actually a high school friend. And she was kind of like, hey, like, you should work on kind of like organizing your brands a little bit more. Which again, Lainey's also gotten on me about, because I've got like,
I was about to say, is this high school friend getting credit for what I say? Like,
no, it has been a constant theme in my life, don't worry. But yeah, so like, we were just kind of on that subject, but kind of brought up the idea of like writing a blog again. And she's like, you should just have like a blog website. And like, I don't necessarily love that idea as like, because website maintenance is kind of a pain in the ass. Anyway, like that's a whole thing. But I was like, no, I do. I should write again and again. Like I've been trying to read more and like just again develop better habits. I know like I constantly talk about that, but it's like it's a constant battle to keep good habits. So anyway, so I was just like, I should kind of hold myself accountable to do this. If it's a nice little like passive income stream, or not passive, right? But like a nice little income stream that doesn't take an enormous amount of effort, that'd be kind of nice too. Because yeah, I definitely need some money right now. But yeah, so basically my goal with that is to kind of put out content that just highlights the way that I think about the sport, just in some of that mindset stuff we talk about, right? Is like what are the important pieces in training, and kind of dive into a little bit more like principles and foundations. And then I don't know, like just let it evolve a little bit. Like I might put some videos up as well, but I kind of am looking to make it a little bit more principle based. And not as much like how-tos, but here's something and here's why. But also maybe like here's how to do it. But I'm not intending to put together like I'm not intending to do like Ken Omo has, literally like step-by-step tutorials that are awesome. I'm not really looking to do that because I'm not that well organized. But it'll hopefully be a spot where, if someone is asking about tracking, I can curate a little bit more knowledge on that. That's a little bit more accessible. And yeah, kind of go from there. I tried doing something similar on the club page like a little while ago. Like you can do like units on Facebook. Like you can do like educational kind of platform thing. But that just didn't really stick. So Patreon is kind of me trying that again, and we'll see how it goes.
Well, I would like to point out, as far as the other content, like I think you should be linking out. So you can say, if you want an exercise that illustrates this concept, go to Dave Carr's video, da da da, and put the hyperlink in there.
Yeah,
You
totally.
know what I mean? Like, why reinvent the wheel? And like, some of these people have been making content for so long and it's really high level. Like,
Yes,
why?
yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's very true. Yeah, and then like a little bit of it too is like experimenting with the idea of like, can I make videos for some of my pet clients in a format that they can go home and watch it kind of thing too, but like sport is what I'm most comfortable with putting content out on. Like it comes the most easily to me, the most naturally, just because I've been doing it the longest. So it's also just kind of a little bit of an experimental ground for me, but hopefully people can get some value out of it as well. So yeah, but like I'm open to suggestions. We'll see where it goes.
I think they will be. I think they will be open to it. And I just remembered something else I really wanted to ask you about, actually. So while I have you,
Yeah.
you just had your first, to my knowledge, online sport client do their BH, right?
Oh yeah, yes. Well, no, actually, Michaela, another one of and again, like I also like I kind of almost didn't want to mention it because I'm like I can't even take that much credit. Like hopefully I help them a little bit in their journeys, but again, it's not like I'm stepping these guys through like A to Z. Like they're also
Kimberly,
yeah, what?
I want to talk about your online sport coaching
Okay,
business.
okay.
Like, I'm not asking you to give disclaimers.
Anyway, so yes, two clients that I have had online sessions with have gotten their BHs within this summer. So it's pretty cool. So
Any more takeaways, or talk about your online like your journey in online content, like offering that, like how has it been? Have you had any weirdness with people's, do people have training directors on the ground that you've had to interact with? Like, what's been going on there, basically?
Yeah, I mean, I think like what's nice about people that seek out online coaching is they didn't I'm not trying to like draw comparisons to people that don't do online coaching. Like I'm not saying like if this then the other, but people that look for online coaching tend to have a little bit more how to say it, like just self-initiative, right? Like they're seeking out outside information and they're curious. And so I think they tend to kind of understand etiquette. Like they're just a little bit more like socially smart people, shall we say? Like people that are not well attuned to, you know, I don't know, like just, I'm so struggling here. Like I haven't, the point is I haven't really had any conflicts because I think people understand the context of like, hey, I'm running ideas by you and I want someone to spot my work and I want help that is a little bit deeper than what I'm getting on the field at club, but like they understand it's not supposed to be a challenge or a replacement or, you know, I'm not trying to take over their training fully. It's very supplemental because it is a little bit limited in what we can do, right? Like I can't be there, you know, literally for every session. There are things that we can do in person that we can't do online. There's things we can do online that we can't do in person kind of thing, right? So it's been really good so far. Like I love my online clients. They're really, you know, if they're bothering to seek out online coaching, like they're really invested. So it tends to almost be like a self-selector. I guess that's what I was looking for before. It's like they self-select as a little bit more of a serious group. And so they're very thoughtful. They come to me with cool questions, really open to feedback and stuff like that. So it ends up being honestly a little bit more like high level of like, here's kind of how I think you should proceed with this exercise overall, but like I'm not as much giving them step-by-step stuff, right? Like they're kind of, I don't know, like a little bit what we were talking about the other day where you like to kind of go home and experiment with stuff. Like they're very much that type of person usually is they're like, okay, I want to get your thoughts on this and just like check me, like tell me if I'm totally off base, but if I'm kind of on the right track, like I'm just going to run with it for a little bit. You know, they'll send some videos and like if I see something egregious, they'll be like, hey, probably not a good idea. But like for the most part, they do overall good work, even without a whole lot of help, honestly. So it ends up being a little bit of more like a guide on the path rather than, you know, here's how you do ABCD. And I think that's really where I also thrive as a coach. Like that's what I enjoy, is kind of giving people principles and letting them figure out the direct application of it, or their style of application. Like I was actually just talking with an online client today that, you know, she's talking about how, she got a puppy recently and she's kind of like, all right, like what, you know, I kind of have these thoughts for what my summer is going to look like. And like, what do you think? And we started to talk about like food work. And she's like, yeah, like for me personally, like I don't necessarily love working with food quite as much. And we kind of talked about like, okay, here's the important principles of what I'm looking for when we work with food, but you can totally achieve that in some other ways as well. Right. So like food work is, it might be the application of how I get, you know, a commitment to a drive object, but that doesn't mean that's the only way to do it. And you just kind of like, here's the pros and cons of different methods and blah, 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 like that kind of thing. Right. And I think those are the really fun conversations for me where I'm probably enjoying the lesson, like just as much as the client, because we can actually flesh out some of those deeper topics. Like it almost feels like kind of a mini podcast, right? Versus like, okay, do this. Like that can be fun for sure. But I think sometimes that almost gets repetitive. Like I like people to be hungry for the deeper knowledge for sure. So it's fun having clients that really like push me on that. So
have you ever considered
a cool journey?
Have you ever considered putting your online clients in like a Facebook group and having like a little online club?
No, but that's not a bad idea, actually.
Because like if they're already sending you videos, they could be sharing the videos with each other.
Yeah, that is not a bad idea. So clients of mine, send me a message on Instagram and let me know if that's something you guys would be interested in. Yeah, it's funny because I'm probably kind of weird about client confidentiality for like absolutely no reason. I don't know, maybe it's like my background in psychology or whatever, but like I'm like, do people want me to, like, do they want to know? Like, do they want me to say their names? Do they, or is it private? Like, I don't know. Like, I
Well,
just, like, do they want to know that there's other clients out there? Which is, like,
it's always
stupid.
best to err on the side of keeping information private in every part of your life. Like, that's always best.
But, like, sometimes that idea doesn't even come into my head that, like, oh, I should create a Facebook group because I'm, like, almost too careful about, like, you know what I mean? It's a weird, like, boundary for me that, like, is absolutely can be crossed, but, like, I don't know why in my head I just have this line of, like, absolutely not. You know? Like, it's not even a potential in my head or a probable thing in my head for some reason.
A
But.
whole separate conversation we were having this weekend with some confirmation people that were down at training is they were like talking about this pie in the sky idea about creating some sort of scale to be able to rate and grade gripping behavior and biting behavior like in the breed. And oh my God, I was like, you guys, we can't even get
Good
people
luck.
to share bone scores, let
I
alone
know.
can you
I
imagine
know.
how much people would not share that? They would
Yeah.
actually not share that.
I totally understand that as a pipe dream, but yeah, I don't think that's gonna happen. But that would be amazing. Again, back to, why livestock is so much better at breeding than us.
Well, we keep drifting back towards the breeder thing, so I think we're gonna have to do that right after the seminar recap episode, but
Yeah, we can. Yeah.
okay, I need to wrap up because I have to go to bed.
Yeah,
So,
sounds good.
do you want to plug your stuff one more time?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so my Patreon, Daredevil Working Dogs on Patreon. So it's patreon.com/Daredevil Working Dogs, or you can use the little search bar. Online clients, like if you're interested in online coaching, contact me on Instagram at Daredevil Working Dogs. Basically, the way I usually run that is like come to me as often or as little as you'd like. Like, I have some people that, once every 3 months, they're like, hey, I want to check in real quick. Like, I had this thing come up and I'm curious on your thoughts. I have some people that talk to me weekly, and both are totally fine. Very a la carte. Usually starts out like people kind of send me videos of just like where they're at in training, and a little bit like what their goals are, what they're looking for, and then we kind of go from there. So very much like, again, whatever floats your boat kind of thing, like very just individualized coaching there. So and then that's probably it, to be honest. Don't really have any litters coming up or anything like that, so
Thank God, right?
I know, honestly, honestly.
As Tate comes home Sunday.
Yeah, right. However, I think we found him a home, so
Ooh,
yeah. I
exciting.
forgot, I didn't tell you about that.
Well, you didn't because nobody tells me anything. So, not surprised. Not surprised at all. I go away one weekend and everyone's having fun out in sock, placing puppies, going to train, all kinds of stuff.
Just all without you.
Okay.
Yeah, this is an interesting episode. We kind of jumped all over the place, but
Well,
yeah,
I
we're
needed like a
good at the thing.
miscellaneous because I had a lot of thoughts that I needed to share ahead of the seminar and like things that have been going on with me. So,
Sounds good.
okay. All right.
All right.
Talk to you
Talk
later. Bye,
later.
guys.
Bye.